A new poetry collection called A Compound of Words brings language and experience from a migrant's life in India back home to Dublin. First poetry collection from Fiona Bulger. Fiona is with me in studio now. I want you to start with a poem that has one of the best titles I've heard in a long time, and you admit it freely as we were getting ready during that reading from Richard Harris that they weren't your words. So explain the title of the poem, first of all.
Well, I was having a chat with Gigio Sebastian, a filmmaker based in Dublin, and I was talking to Gigio about how he speaks Malayalam as his mother tongue, but with his children, he speaks a lot of English because now they're living in Dublin and they speak English. And we were discussing the issue around, you know, if your mother tongue is one language and you're in a country where the other language is widely spoken, what do you do? And Gigio said to me, well, he said, my head speaks English, but if my limbs could speak, they'd speak Malayalam. And Malayalam is the language spoken in Kerala. So, yes.
Let's hear the poem. We'll talk more about your linguistic experiences afterwards.
Okay, so my head speaks English, but if my limbs could speak, they'd speak Malayalam. I remember how dumb I was trying to speak Irish to my daughter for a month, instead remaining silent, speechless, listening to her father babble river stream of words, Mudumari, Muduma, Bangra Magu, Putani Mari. My love, deserted by sound, burned hot inside me until I spoke with my limbs. The language of cells, then came these words. I do not dare to call my own. Stolen from another land, copied from another mother.
And that's Fiona Bulger reading her poem, My Head Speaks English, But If My Limbs Could Speak, They'd Speak Malayalam. And that's from her collection, A Compound of Words. I think it's interesting when you hear a poet talking about how words can be more than just words on a page. They can almost be something physical, like the dancing that it is in that particular poem. But your own linguistic background is very interesting because you have a number of languages, Fiona.
Well, I grew up in a house where Irish was considered a very important language, although when I lived in Poland, I realised that my parents couldn't actually speak to me in Irish because I rang them and I didn't want the people around me to understand, and I spoke to them in Irish.
Best use of Irish, I think, one that we've all used in foreign situations away from home.
Yeah, yeah. So I spent a lot of summers as a child in Dunqueen, so I was very conscious of Irish as a living language.
Mm. And did you attend a Gael school or anything? Irish was important at home.
It was valued, and then my experience in Dunqueen, I saw it as a living language. And then I was exposed to a lot of Arabic, actually. I had a lot of friends who spoke Arabic, so I learned bits and pieces of Arabic. And then I went out to India, and there I was living in a Hindi-speaking area, but my partner's mother tongue was Kannada, but he had grown up initially in a Tamil-speaking region. And then...
And we're not talking slight variations. We're talking about totally different languages.
Different alphabets even. Yeah. And we're talking also, like, Hindi is obviously Hindi. Hindi, Malayalam that we had here, Tamil and Kannada. Each of them has a different alphabet. So the scripts are completely different.
But you must have had a brain then that was very open to different languages. Do you think that was the experience with Irish as a child?
I think so, but I also have to admit that I only speak one language fluently, and that's English. Mm. So, and this is the problem in the poem. I didn't want my daughter growing up speaking English as her mother tongue because I felt that it's so easy, if English is your mother tongue, to never bother learning any other language. And so I really wanted her to have a minority language or a non-English language at least. Mm. Hindi is not a minority language by any manner or means. But I wanted her to have another language than English as her mother tongue. And Irish, I thought, would be that language. But I just couldn't find the words. I didn't know the word for crawling. I didn't know the word for, you know, breastfeeding. I didn't know all those. I could talk to you about Irish poetry or Irish nationalism in Irish.
But I couldn't have day-to-day conversational words. That was what stopped you.
Yeah, yeah. The words for speaking to a baby. And they're the words that my husband had in his language. And they were the words then, you know, Mudumari, which means a small, cuddly little thing. You know, Putani is like another small baby kind of creature. Yeah. So they're all those cuddling words. And I didn't have those in Irish. I had to revert to English.
Yeah, and that's why we talk about mother tongue, because of the words that you hear from the mother or the person that's providing some kind of parenting to you will use those baby words.
Yeah.
And therefore they're ingrained they're present from a very young age. Right, you've touched on part of the reason for all the travelling. You said, my husband. So that's what brought you to India.
Yes,
when was that?
Fell in love. His name is Kalyan, and he was in Ireland. He was studying, he had done his PhD and he was doing a postdoc in Trinity under Siddharth Sen. And That's how I met him. He was in Dublin. I was at a party. He was at a party. I fell in love and he went back to India and I said, well, I'm coming. And he said no. And I said yes. And so I went. So I went to Allahabad first.
And did you go, you know, with the view that I'm going to work and I'm going to find my way here? Or were you saying, you know, I'm going and I'm going with you whether you like it or not?
Well, he went out initially and he had his job. And I said, well, I would go for a month.
Right.
And then I told my parents about a few days before I left. And then after a month, I decided I'd stay another month. And my parents kept getting these messages. This was in the days when hardly anybody had email and long distance telephone calls were complex and expensive.
And so you would letters. You were writing letters?
I was writing letters. Yeah. My mother has kept all my letters. So, yeah, after years in boarding school, I was well trained in the art of writing letters. So, yeah, we wrote letters back and forth. And yeah, so I stayed 2 months, then 3 months. Then I came back to Ireland. Then to prove that I could live away from home without being dependent on a man, I went off to live in Poland for a year and I taught English there and then I came back to Ireland again and then I went back to India and then I stayed there for a year and then came back to Ireland and then I worked and then I went back again to India.
So there's a lot of India is the big to and from point really in the midst of all. Yeah. Did Polish enter your linguistic framework at any point along the way?
Yeah, mogę on mówić po polsku.
Well, thank you for that. I presume you're saying I know a little Polish.
It says, yeah, I know. I can
That's
speak
how much
Polish.
I can ascertain.
Brilliant.
Not
brilliant,
how much I know.
Yeah. So I learned some Polish. We joke about a friend of mine who speaks about 10 languages fluently, that she's unable to say quiet in any language. So I just, if I hear a language, I just want to know a few words. So, but I don't speak them fluently.
Yeah, that's interesting now that you take up that thing of quietness, because it's mentioned in the poem you just read for us as well. Mm. In fact, it's not about speaking and constantly, you know, barracking somebody, but it's giving them time to speak. Is that an important thing? Is that in some ways what you have to do to let a poem come to you? You have to remain silent.
You have to be in a quiet space. And that was why I think I didn't write until I was back in Ireland in 2008. I was writing.
So there was no writing going on in all of those journeys and travels. Writing wasn't to the fore.
I was writing letters. And years later, I found my notebooks. And it turned out I had been writing poetry and I had written a novel and I'd done all kinds of things. But I was never conscious of that. It was only when I came back to Ireland that I became conscious that I was writing. Mm. And then I began to show my work to people. And then I did a master's in creative writing. Then I tried to get it published. And so that was when I realised.
Let's listen to another poem. And this is Course Outline. And course, of course, can be spelled several ways. Of course, course. And the way you've spelled it here, it's the COA or SE. But I presume there's a little bit of punning going on or double meaning being mentioned within the midst of it. Let's hear the poem.
Yeah, so it's called Course Outline. I remove my skin, pin it with wooden stakes near the liffey to dry in the sun. With tanner's lime, I prepare it for writing. I take cow dung mixed with water to form a pure black ink and write myself. When the writing is done, I wrap the skin around me, my words, incantations protecting me against those who say it is not so.
Fiona Bulger reading her poem Course Outline from her collection A Compound of Words. And the first question is, how autobiographical is that? Or did such a wrapping up happen and take place?
Well, I didn't quite flay myself alive, but I did write. This is the only flaying poem in the book, I would like to point out. Health warning. But my first kind of collection, which I wrote for a master's in creative writing, which has never been published as it is called Shedding My Skin. And quite a lot of those poems are about physically, you know, harming myself in some way, which I never did. Mm. And people have said to me, oh, that's such a disturbing number of poems to read. And it was like, well, it's disturbing because it's all in the poems. I didn't do it to myself. Mm. So in a way, I felt when I came back to Ireland as if I had been flayed alive. I think a migrant's experience is leaving behind a skin and you have to grow a new skin in the new country. And when you don't have your skin, there's nothing between you and the outside world. You're vulnerable. Everything is painful. And I think for any migrant, even a returning migrant, I think it's a very difficult experience.
And then given that you're talking about all these different places that you lived and moved to and, you know, wanted to prove I can survive by myself, et cetera, is Ireland still very much home, or have other places become home?
home for me, I think, has never been a specific geographical location. It's always been, I know it sounds like a cliche, but the people. And for me, you know, home is the friends and the people who love me and the people I love in this place. And I'm going to India next week. And there will be people who love me and friends, and that will be home. So I think you can have lots of homes, I think, wherever you're loved. But yeah, it is a good question. What is home?
Yeah.
What,
yeah. Okay, so the home is probably in the poems. If we read the poems, we'll find out where is home and what is home for you. The third poem that you have for us, when we talk about the Indian subcontinent, we're going to talk about, you know, you could pick any spot on that continent and there would be political difficulties that would need to be discussed. How did the politics of, it's a very large subcontinent, did the politics find its way into the poetry in any way?
I think the poems deal with issues, people's issues, and those people's issues, you can put them into a political context and you can understand them in that way. I was always moved by the situation in Sri Lanka, the situation for Tamils in Sri Lanka. Living in Tamil Nadu, you hear a lot about that. I also have a lot of Sri Lankan Tamil friends in Dublin, whom I had even before I went out, so I knew about that situation. The situation in Kashmir, as an Irish person, anywhere there's a border, anywhere there's a minority, I think we as Irish people will always tune in and try to understand what's going on. So the situation in Kashmir also.
Yeah, and this poem that you're going to read for us has certainly got a political angle within it. Do we need a context for this?
Yeah, so a few years after I came back, a friend of mine had brought Parvina Hangir to Dublin, and she is she is the convener of an organisation which works with, they're called Mothers of the Disappeared, and it's about, basically about 1991, a lot of young men disappeared. And years later, mass graves were found in Kashmir. And Kashmir is probably one of the most heavily militarized zones in the world. So it's a place where, to my knowledge, things are still quite challenging and difficult for people.
All right.
So this poem, I have to say again, I've stolen a lot of the words. So anything beautiful in it is probably somebody else's. Ghazal for Parvina and her son Javed, disappeared 1991. Where have you hidden my new crescent moon? I search for my son by the light of the moon. A hawk swooped down and took him away. Is he high in the mountains, near to the moon? When he disappeared, my fear went away. I approached the armed men under sun and moon. I've searched camps, hospitals and jails. Where is he? Can my child see the moon? I watched over my son as he grew under the waxing and waning of the moon. The bodies they found prove our worst fears. The tears of the living light up the moon. I cannot forget his bright sunny face. Grey corpses glitter beneath the full moon.
Ghazal for Parvina and her son Javed, disappeared 1991. The title of the poem from Fiona Bulger, and it's from her collection A Compound of Words, and that is published by Yoda Press, yodapress.co.in. So there's an Indian aspect to it as well. I presume you'll be launching in India, or maybe you've already done that as well.
I'll be launching in India on the 28th of December, but there's a first reading in Dublin. It will be introduced by Dr. Lucy Collins from UCD. It'll be in the Dublin Writers Museum on Parnell Square at 3 p.m. Everybody's welcome.
All right. 3 p.m. on?
Sunday.
Yes,
the 15th of December.
Sunday the 15th of December. That's Fiona Bulger there speaking to us about her collection, A Compound of Words.